I'm John Hooley. I'm the president of Resurgent. I'm here today with Carl Smith, the owner of the Bureau of Digital, a man whose business attire is mainly flip-flops, and who once worked in the business for 3 weeks before they realized it and hired him. Carl, thanks for being with me today.
I appreciate it, John. I appreciate the invite.
Yeah, so what I wanted to discuss with you, I mentioned it before we started this off, but associations are facing this challenge of running remote digital events, and you've already faced that. So I was hoping to pick your brain a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did you start? What's your experience to date?
So I think besides regular webinars and things of that nature, we had our first online summit, I believe 3 years ago. And the first thing we tried was just kind of a bunch of webinars in a row. And I think a lot of people do it that way.
And right.
It's just not good. People fall off. They, you know, it's not quite the same. So what you really have to do is inject some personality into it. And it doesn't mean that whoever is giving the talks or doing whatever has to be overly energetic.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is there needs to be a host. And there should be music. And there should be humor. And there should be, it should be fun. It should be an event. But you can't make it like you would an in-person event. You can't try to replicate it. You just have to start over and embrace the online potential.
That's interesting because I've seen associations, I think, are especially used to like making money off of their trade show. And there's a lot of people that are approaching this whole idea as it's an analog. Do the same thing we did in physical as we are going to do in digital. And what I'm seeing a little bit is it's a different domain. It sounds like for you, that's the case.
Yeah, definitely. And we had an event yesterday. It was all about selling during a crisis. And
right.
It was David C. Baker and Blair Enns. And one of the things that I think is great with online is everybody can ask a question. We had 100 people that were watching and they all had the opportunity to interact. You can't do that when you're in person, right? Now with a trade show, yeah, this is going to be kind of tricky. I'll tell you one thing we're looking at for some of our events is what we're calling a bureau box. That means when it's safe to send things in the mail again. We're real sensitive. We don't want to, you know, make anybody upset or take any risks. But this idea that we can still send out snacks and we can still send out special things that people aren't expecting, even let them choose the area they want the event to be in. Do you want to be in the mountains? You want to be on the beach? You want to be in the city? You're going to get different swag when you open your box, right?
Huh.
And you can have multiple boxes inside that box so that at different sessions, you're opening something new, right? Something that keeps people engaged. With a trade show, I would say, you know, that there are different things you can do, especially in Zoom, where you can have breakout rooms and things like that. So take advantage of that where people could sign up maybe to get some quick pitches, right? Like maybe if you've got one person who's way into, say, advanced tech for marketing and another person who really wants to understand more about point of purchase displays or whatever it might be, set up a different room for each one.
Yeah.
So that they can go in there and get their little lightning pitches or whatever it might be, because there's no way they're going to interact with the product or interact with anything like that.
Right.
So again, just give them that opportunity to learn and ask questions and do all the things that we just can't do if we've got a few hundred people walking around a room.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And those are really, I think, excellent ideas in terms of focusing more on the experience and the difference of experience between a virtual and a live. I know something that associations always do in the physical space or often do is some sort of industry speed dating, which sounds like it worked really well for that sort of meeting room, you know?
Yeah.
Just tell me what matters and check them in, check them out. What sort of challenges have you faced that are different than the physical world? Like in the physical world, you have room blocks, right? And you've got all this logistical concerns. What are the challenges of running it remote?
I think the challenge of running it remote is that you don't necessarily, and in fairness, we're doing our first big event, which is going to be Growth Camp. That's later this month. So I'll be able to tell you more after that.
Yeah.
But I anticipate our biggest challenge is going to be, even though somebody may pay several hundred dollars to spend a day with other people online, it's going to be really easy to get pulled away because you're doing it at home.
Right.
So one of the things we're doing is we're going to have like a little opening meet and greet the night before the event. where everybody is welcome to bring their significant other, their pets, their kids, whatever. So that during our time together, it's not a big deal if we see that Falcon just jumped on the screen or that Timmy came in because he wants his snack. You know, it'll be like, it'll almost be endearing. So yeah. What I don't want is for somebody to feel like they can't be on the event because life happened. I want them to be on the event because life happened.
Right.
This is our opportunity to embrace each other at a new level of humanity that we used to always try to shield each other from. And I'm hardly the first person to say that. I just truly embrace that thought.
Well, I think that's the first time I've heard it. So you're at least cutting edge for me.
All right, well, edit that out. Make it mine.
Okay. You're at the front. So in terms of managing the chat, because this is something that came up again as you're talking about that live environment, you can't, in a real environment, you have that one microphone going out to the crowd or people are lining up at it. Is there any way that you found to manage the chat? Because you get a lot of people on there, you get a lot of questions and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it's going to depend on the technology you use. I know that Zoom has some privacy issues, but if you just put a password on it or make it registered, it kind of solves all those problems. So I think it's a little bit of, it's like every phone can be called by anybody. That's kind of the way Zoom is, if you're not careful and lock it down. But if you have Zoom and you like Zoom, it has a Q&A feature where people can just put their question in. And then you can either reply in person, you know, you can actually reply live, or you can have somebody type a response. So when we had COVID-19 financial options for small shops, Q&A, we had 3 CFOs and 2 lawyers on a panel. And we had 35 questions come in over the hour. Well, whoever was on the panel that wasn't speaking would take a question and reply to it via text. They would just type in the answer.
Oh, nice.
The other thing is you can't have the chat, and that's great. Like we're always watching the chat because we want the crowd to interact with each other as well. Another thing you can't really do in person that you can do online is have the crowd be talking to each other, right? So that's kind of cool. And then the other thing is with Zoom, you can actually click on an attendee and turn their mic on. So we had one situation where somebody had asked a question and we needed some clarification. It was easy for me to just quickly in the attendee panel, find that person, turn on their mic and say, Tom, do you mind giving us a little more background? We just want to make sure we're answering the right question. I've turned your mic on. And then they're able to reply. So the tools in Zoom, and this is not a Zoom, you know, plug. I wish I got paid by them. Good Lord, I'm paying them. But Zoom, I think, is just ready for this. And also, you know, we were talking about the idea of breakouts. You can set in Zoom to randomize people in different breakouts. So you could say, I want to have 10 breakouts of 5 people each go, and it's just going to be a serendipity call. You're going to have people meet each other that didn't know each other. So that's just another little tip for what we've been playing around with right now. But in terms of managing the chat, it's actually really easy because you've got ultimate control in being able to turn on and off somebody's microphone and also being able to put them over into a special area just for Q&A.
Yeah, that's really interesting because one of the challenges with a virtual event is that the reason people go to these live events much of the time is for hallway tracks. It's hard to do a hallway track virtual, but something that you can do virtual that you can't do live is you can get all those shy people into a room to talk to each other because there's, you know what I mean? Like a lot of times if you're new to a live event, like I went to one of the Bureau's events for the first time and I had to intro myself. You have to be brave. You have to go out there out of your way to, you know, talk with people, but virtually you can sort of force function it.
Yeah, no, you can. And you know, it's interesting because, a good friend of mine who's an introvert said, this is introvert's paradise. We are all so happy right now. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'm an introvert, so it relates.
Yeah, and I flip back and forth in a weird way. But I think in terms of the hallway conversations, that is what everybody always wants. I mean, that's where you learn. Like I was part of a podcast for 5 years that got really popular that all started because I was having a conversation with somebody I just met sitting down over a beer. And somebody looked at us and said, this should be a podcast, right? Next thing you know, we got 5,000 listeners because the two of us just had a chemistry. And those are the things, those are the people you meet in those hallway tracks. So what I would say there is, and we've seen this, a lot of people start having virtual happy hours, right? I got this question from somebody yesterday. They said, you know, I met most of my clients at events, at in-person events. I'm not good at calling people. I'm not good at emailing people. But if I meet somebody and we can have a casual conversation that's going to lead to what I offer and what they need, then things will be great. I say, you know, get all of your current clients, tell them to invite a friend and right. have a happy hour, because some of those friends are going to be in the same space. And the thing about the happy hours, and this was funny, I will say I had to go to 3 in a row. I'm pretty sure at that third one I was overserved. You know, I got to go back and look. Somebody slipped something in my drink as I was sitting here by myself. But the thing that I saw work really well, and I David Baker and Blair Inns had a little happy hour that I was privileged to go to. And they had probably about 30 people on it. And what they did was they went around the screen and asked each person kind of a question. So it wasn't this mad free-for-all or, you know, like you couldn't talk because everybody talking would just cut everything out. You still, even when you're doing something that's going to be more social like that, you can do it that way. And one thing we're going to play with, and this is getting to that idea of those hallway tracks, we're going to try to integrate Slack and Zoom in one session. So let's say that, John, you got asked the question, hey, what was a positive thing that happened this week? And you said, Carl actually showed up when we were supposed to do this interview, right? And so you can talk or whatever. And then there's somebody else on the Zoom chat who has had that experience. They were like, and they can, via Slack, just send you a Slack message and say, hey, can I spin up a quick video? I'd like to talk to you, right? Then you can put your screen, you can turn off your screen on Zoom, or you can leave it on. But then you can have a Slack conversation via video right there. So it's kind of this idea is, hey, let's go over in the corner here. I'd like to talk to you for a second. Right. Is it going to work? I don't know if it's going to work, but it's an idea. And that's the thing I think we have right now. We almost have this pure potential of trying to just do different things. And I'm really excited about the idea of, again, I said, don't try to replicate in person online. And I'm trying to do that in a way, but this idea of those private conversations, those one-on-one conversations, because you heard something in the bigger group and you said, I want to talk to that person.
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of thing, or even it may end up being in the chat, because in the Zoom chat, you can select one person. So it may be that you even can do it there and say, hey, we're going to have a break in an hour. I would love to just spin up a quick Zoom so we can talk.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that through. I actually started this morning with a Zoom meeting call, hour and a half, people I barely know. And we've had some of those interactions like, hey, I'd really love to learn more about what you're doing or ask you about this. So there's definitely potential there.
Yeah.
What, in terms of selling the conference, what sort of price points have you been able to sell at?
Oof, it is so crazy right now. And I think the biggest challenge is, I was talking with a friend of mine, Oliver, who runs a magazine. He's working with Shopify right now on some stuff. And I use the phrase empathy versus eating, right? Because it's like, you have to be so in tune with where everybody is right now, because it's where you are as well. But you also have to eat. And so it's this challenge of, and I don't think they're at odds. I think what it truly is you just have to be a new level of honest.
Mm.
And it's, the empathy that you feel for somebody else is also going to be how they feel towards you because of more transparency. It used to be we worry about oversharing. I don't know where that line is anymore between transparency and oversharing, because we start off every conversation with how are you, and we end it with stay strong, right? this is what's new. So in that context, I think we have to start every conversation with, what's changed for you and how can I help you now? We were having this conversation yesterday where someone was like, we have a phase two that's scheduled to start and they've slowed down and I don't know how to force it through. I was just like, you can't force it through. You have to, if you want them to respond to you, you need to just reach out however you do, if it's email, if it's phone, whatever's normal in the way you connect with them, and say, hey, things are definitely different. I just want to see how we can best service you now. If it's not time for phase two, that's fine. If we can find a new way to keep working and maybe we can defer the payment, you let me know. The rules have changed. We just want to keep moving forward with you. Because there are very few people who are going to not reply to that. If you're saying, I'm okay if you say no, you've diffused that whole situation. And the other thing, and I can't remember who it was that said this, but the idea of saying at the end of it, I know you'd do the same for me, suddenly makes it reciprocal, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm, John, if I was supposed to come over and paint a room in your house, and you're like, we don't want anybody coming over to the house right now because we are distancing of a social variety, I could say, well, you know what, maybe we could just take a look at the rest of the house online and we could plan out what the colors could be. And I just want to keep working with you. I know you do the same for me. So is there anything we can do to move forward versus just sit here and be bored? You know, and more than likely that person is either going to say, no, I'm going to sit here and be bored. At which point, you know, you're off the hook and you can move on. Or they're going to say, you know, that sounds kind of interesting. Why don't we try that?
Right. Right. For sure. What about in terms of like marketing the conference and selling the conference? Do you think that that sort of empathetic? Oh,
that was the question.
Not that so what I you think, said wasn't useful. It was. Because we're all facing that.
Yeah. I think it's kind of the same. I found that, you know, we want people to become members. We know that the way forward right now, we've always had members and they've always been great. We're not going to be able to, I mean, we watched our revenue drop 95% overnight, 95%.
That's right.
And we're like everybody else. We're talking with the team about, you know, having to go kind of touch and go on stuff. So when it comes to the events, we're experimenting. We did $10 price point for the Q&As and for the less formal webinar types, but the things that are, you know, they're not really a, we're going to send out a whole bunch of information. It's going to be much more about ask us questions and we'll tell you what we know. $10. And you know what? It didn't seem, we saw about a 30% conversion from people who came to the ticketing page to those who bought. And that felt pretty good. Now on an event, on a webinar, we've got some, you know, more official webinars with really well-known speakers, great influencers, great leaders. We're putting those at 25. Now, again, if you become a member, which is $19 a month, we've also opened up monthly membership. So that's a change. You get all of this for free. So that's another thing when you start looking at the pricing, and we're trying to get to a new mode of being able to hang out, stay around, right? So it's like, it's weird when I talk about this, I don't want to sound like we're playing people or trying to figure out what they'll let us have. It's much more about what can they do? And $25 has not been a problem for those. Again, we're seeing about a 30-ish percent conversion for people to get to the ticketing page, but much fewer people go to the ticketing page. So I think I don't know if it's the price point or these events are further out. So again, we're really at the beginning of this. It's kind of hard to say, but I'll also say that we will let a speaker give out a free discount code. And when we had David and Blair on, they had a Two Bobs discount code that they sent out, and we saw maybe 35 people sign up in the next 4 days. Now, they're also both very popular. They've got great followings. So that obviously plays a role. But I think if you're doing something online and there's good value, you're not going to, I mean, you might get to go out to dinner, right, at $10 a shot. We'll see what happens with the other stuff. Now, when it comes to trying to do more of an online workshop, we're taking our workshop that was going to be in New York. We had a lot of New York events this year, John. Don't think they're going to happen.
I'm sorry.
We had a workshop in person. That workshop was $6.99. And we're bringing that down to $4.99. And for members, it'll be $2.99. Again, we're just stabbing in the dark. And what we're really looking at is what seems fair. Not so much pricing is always a dark art, but we're just trying to see what seems fair. And you know what? If nobody buys, we're going to lower it. This is not a time to stand your guns. It's not a time to do things you don't want to do. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying to, you know, give up on your, you know, your goals or your values or any of that stuff. But when it comes to what you offer, you're going to have to be flexible to make it through this crisis. Is it going to last 2 weeks or 2 months or 6 months? It's going to be different for every industry. For us, in the mainly we were the event space, although we're an amazing community. In the event space, it could be a year. I mean, honestly, until people are comfortable traveling. We have no idea what's going to happen 6 months from now if COVID-19, you know, has a little resurgence, as people predict. So, but I would say when you're doing your workshops, look at your audience, look at what you normally charged, and make sure you come off of it 30%, 40%. You know, for some people, it'll be easier because they don't have to travel. And then our bigger events, which would have and did, you know, they were selling for about $4,000 a seat. Those are going to come down to the $899 range. One of the things there that I think is really important is if you were going to have people in a room and breakout rooms throughout the whole day, you've got to make sure you give them breaks. You can't have somebody sitting in front of a laptop the whole time. But one thing just to throw out there that I think makes it really special is once you see the content people want, you can reach out to your network to find that either really smart, really popular, whoever it might be that really understands that content, and have them be a special guest, right? Just for one session. Mm. And so this becomes the type of thing, if you're going to charge more, make sure you're giving more, make sure it's known, but also leave a little mystery, right? If you can have somebody that's going to show up in the burnout session, but not tell anybody who it is, and then it turns out to be somebody that the community really loves, right? For us, it would be like Sherry Walling, who's this amazing human. She's got a book called The Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Shit Together, right?
I've worked with Sherry.
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, don't tell anybody that she's a special guest, but she did email me back today, so she's going to do something with us. That's awesome. But so I think that's another thing. It's like, if you're going to charge more, make sure people get more. And you know what? I couldn't have Sherry just show up if we were going to be in New York for one session.
Right.
It wouldn't be worth it to her. It wouldn't be worth it financially, like the whole thing. But now we can do all that. So I would say, you know, put your pricing, lower it slowly, because raising it's going to be hard. But I would also make sure that you let people know on some level, this is crisis pricing. You know, we understand things are different and we want to help everybody. So
yeah, it's interesting. I spoke with Charles Maxwood about this, and he was pricing conferences like $25 to $100. And I think you've done a $100 conference.
Yeah.
But his perspective on it was that the cloud of the speaker is really what's driving most of the value. Whereas an in-person event, that hallway track,
you know, the venue, the space.
Yeah,
I mean, New Orleans. The value. Oh man, New Orleans, when we were at the Orpheum, that theater is just like so amazing. So it's like, yeah, you promote the experience. Whereas when you're online, you promote the connection. I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah. But the value, I mean, the value is still there for a lot of this stuff. Like, it's just, it's really trying to assess what that value is now that it's changed, like trying to get an accurate assessment.
Yeah.
What about on the cost side? Putting on a live event is with considerable cost.
It's unbelievable. And I'm still trying to get some of those deposits back. So force majeure is easy to say, and it's easy to enforce when you have a pandemic, but getting the deposits back, they can say, oh yeah, we can't go into our office because we've got, you know, shelter at home, and sorry, that's where the checkbook is. But I would say, yeah, the time cost. So it's really an interesting question, John. If you were going to say, if you just go flat out, yeah, it's so much cheaper to do an online event. But you're going to have, if that is going to be your main source of revenue, mm-hmm. or exposure or lead generation or whatever, to replace an in-person event, you're going to have to do more. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the time commitment is going to change. And I don't think the exchange is going to go up. You're going to spend more time over more events, more very careful promotion, because you have to be, rightfully, you have to be sensitive. But I mean, we've increased our number of sales per week by about 400% in terms of the number of transactions, 400%.
That's awesome.
Which came out to be just under $400.
Well, don't talk about the second number, just the first number.
Well, that's it, right? So you have to realize that there are going to be other things you can do. I will say what has saved us is the amazing relationships with our sponsors like MailChimp and Envision and some new people who are looking to come on. They hung with us and they said, let's do this. And we're actually getting them better engagement, better exposure with this audience, where if we're doing a riverboat cruise, or if we hire a jazz trio to be the breaks in between sessions, that's really cool. But now they're going to be on these videos with a thank you and watermarks and all that sort of stuff. And they're going to be mentioned in all the post-event stuff. So I think in terms of the cost, it goes way down. In terms of being able to offer value and get paid for it, it's going to be about sponsors. Mm. Because the attendees, yeah, you want to put value on it. If somebody pays $10 for something, they're going to show up. If it's free, they're less likely to show up. Unless that content or that the human that's presenting it is like super powerful. So in order to get the right exchange so that the right people are there to hear the message of the sponsor, and I always, every sponsor we have is vetted by the community. So that's another thing. It's like, I always say, does anybody have a problem with these people? And they will tell you if they do. We've got 8,000 in the community. They tell us. But so I think when you get the right sponsors with the right audience, with all of that, you can still, I don't want to say thrive because we're not there yet, but you can still keep going without a doubt.
Hmm. And in terms of adding value for these remote events, you mentioned like a placement being between sessions, giving them a video spot. You mentioned that box that you're going to send out to make it more of an experience to attend the conference. Yeah.
The bureau box, baby. I wanted to do that for years. In a lot of ways, I think anybody who's a tinkerer, not that we're enjoying the reason, but we've got this opportunity right now to just change everything. So yeah, the bureau box. Yeah, definitely excited about that.
Are there any other sponsor placements that you're using for the live events?
Yeah. So one other thing that we can do when we're doing things online that we can't do when we're in person a lot of times is record everything. It's almost a given that we're going to record everything.
Yeah.
Which means we can transcribe everything, which means we can actually compartmentalize stuff, curate it, put it into really good notes, which can have logos and thank yous and links and all of that. So now all of your post-event follow-ups can have valuable content that means that anything for a sponsor is going to hang out longer. And I think I'm really excited with this for our growth camp because we're going to be able to curate all of these conversations. They'll still be very private, but where an attendee is always jotting down notes. Like if you ever come to one of our camps, what I always hear is I took 40 pages of notes. I condensed it into 18 things I thought I might try. I tried three of them. One of them changed everything, right? So now we'll be able to help those people stay engaged. They'll still be able to take their notes, but now they're going to get like this lovely packet at the end that basically is just insights and ideas that the room came up with. And we can even brand different pages based on the most relevant service provider, sponsor, whoever it might be.
Nice. Yeah. That's a fantastic idea. In terms of pitching it to attendees, how are you thinking about your pitch?
It's really not a pitch so much as an invitation. And I appreciate that it could feel like I'm just sugarcoating it a little bit, but we really say like, and a lot of this starts for me this weekend, and only with people that I know really well. I really don't reach out to a bunch of people on the weekend, but times have changed. But it's really about reaching out and just saying, hey, these are the other people that are gonna be in the room. These are the conversations we're gonna have. I know I saw you in the channels talking about this stuff. I think it'd be great if you can join us. Here's the cost. If that's a problem, if it's something you can't do right now, let me know. We'll figure that out. We just love to have the right people in the room. And that's that has been what I've said about our bigger events the whole time. We just want the right people in the room. And it's not about playing anybody or making them feel special or anything like that. We don't ask the wrong people to come into the room because the right people will get pissed. Right. So it's like, you have to make sure. So when you get that invitation, I think it actually means something.
Right.
At least that's what I tell myself. And, very rarely do I not have somebody respond with either why they can't or why they'd love to. I think it's the nature of always being as honest and open as you can and never pushing anyone to do something that they say is not a fit.
Right. Yeah. I think that's generally wise just in terms of trying to help other people.
Just to be a human, I think it's a good plan. Yeah.
So that's more for the camps, right? Where they're smaller, but they're higher priced. They're like $499, $699.
Yeah. That's what we're going for.
Cool. I think we've covered the tech stack. I think we've answered most of my questions. This has been really insightful for me. And I know a lot of people in the association space will find it insightful. I really appreciate you taking the time to share.
You're welcome, John. I want to share one last thing that I think is really important. Remember that you're going to have people attending from different time zones. So don't plan on 9 a.m. start if California is going to be there and you're in Florida. I'm not saying I did this. It was not me. But remember that you are going to have people in different parts of the world, and this is an opportunity. You can take one event and have it three times in different time zones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some really good insight. That's something else it's hard to do in person.
Absolutely. But
the time zone thing. I tried to schedule a call yesterday and I went from Central Time to Pacific Midway Time to Pacific Los Angeles Time. Yeah. Remote work.
That's crazy. There you go. But thank you so much, John. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl.